This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, hello, Place to Be Nation universe. We are back for the monthly reaction show for World Wrestling Entertainment's network special pay-per-views. I'm your host, Chris Zellner. Joined as always by my co-host Devin Hales, the Oracle of WWE. And Devin, we're here to talk about Extreme Rules. And this was not an extreme show. It was extremely tedious. Well, I don't know about tedious, but, you know, it was dull. Would you go with that? Extremely dull?
Yeah, that's probably a good description. Yeah, this show just didn't have any flavor to it at all. It was, you know, it's typically Extreme Rules is too oversaturated with Extreme Rules gimmicks and stipulations, but this time around it had almost none. You know, I mean, yeah. None of these matches had any sort of, you know, crazy stipulation to it. But I mean, you know, obviously a couple of matches did, but. There are a few reasons for that. You know, one, I think at least just from looking at the show, just on paper, a lot of these feuds and storylines, you know, about half of them aren't, you know, long-term feuds. They're just sort of one-offs before SummerSlam. And the other reason is we're in July and Extreme Rules used to happen in April or May following up WrestleMania to end a lot of programs. So when you don't have that, you know, the pay-per-view didn't serve as a program ender. It just sort of served as a sort of layover month pay-per-view, kind of just, I guess, sort of a, you know, a forgettable show. And it's weird.
Yeah,
that's sort of been the trend for the July several years. You know, there was, you know, Battleground 2016. 2016 was a good show that had the Shield Triple Threat and stuff like that. And but, you know, there's been plenty of Battleground shows and stuff. And stuff like that. So I mean, or the one where they did the bait and switch with Rollins and Ambrose. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
They hyped the match up and people were, and I think y'all did this podcast and it was Dylan and I think Charles from PWO and a few other people and were just like talking about how ridiculous that was. So July historically has been sort of a rough month for WWE, particularly this decade. When it comes to booking and whatnot. So in some ways it wasn't that surprising, but you know, we're so used to Extreme Rules being a pretty unique and interesting pay-per-view, and it just wasn't this time around at all.
No, it really wasn't. And a lot of, well, there was a couple of memorable things that happened, which we'll talk about as the show goes along, but yeah. Now, they had 12 matches on paper going to this show.
And they did.
And I was like, oh my god, this show's gonna go forever. Not the case.
No.
Pleasant surprise. As we'll talk about some short matches occurring on this show and two pre-show matches. So we start off with Andrade Cien Almas versus Sin Cara. A rematch from SmackDown on Tuesday, which was a pretty damn good TV match. This
yes,
one
it was.
As far as a good match, I don't know if I would say that, but Jesus, these guys were killing each other. And there was some, I mean, sloppy spots that were just looked brutal. Sin Cara trying to do the Dragon Lee Rana to the floor. Oh, that killed him and Almas and the apron bump and woof. I mean, these guys were just taking punishment here in this short match. Almost got the win, though, which he needed, and it's time to really start spotlighting him, I think. He needs to move up into the picture because, you know, they had been promising that Sin Cara match on television for weeks, and they waited and waited and waited, and they finally did it. And now they've done two matches. He's won both of them. He needs to move up into the picture. So what are your thoughts on the match, and where do we go from here with all of us?
Yeah, the match was good. Like you said, it wasn't as good as the match on Tuesday. But it had some crazy spots again, and they did the insane tilt-a-whirl Poison Ron or whatever the hell it was. That spot's totally ludicrous. and of course, like you mentioned, the Dragon Lee Ron off the apron was horrifying. Yeah, it was a good match, and I'm definitely ready to see Almas move up on the roster and more into the picture, because he's one of the best wrestlers on the planet when he's at his best. I mean, the Gargano series and the Aleister Black match, Mania Weekend, are both are all great matches, and especially the first Gargano match, or the, I guess technically the second or third, but you know, first this year. And you know, Rumble Weekend is one of the best matches in the history of the company. I mean, he's an outstanding wrestler, and I really want to see him be moved up. You know, I don't think he has to be a main eventer or anything like that, but to be a solid, consistent presence in the mid card is something that I really love to see. And he could have tons of great matches with a lot of good wrestlers. And you know, SmackDown's got a loaded roster when it comes to in ring talent. So there's a lot you can do with him. In terms of interesting matchups and feuds, and Zelina Vega is an excellent manager and mouthpiece, and she can add a lot to his act, and has and will. So you know, you also have that dynamic. So you could do some fun angles with him as well, involving her. There's a lot of potential and a lot of fun, interesting options to do with him. Whether or not they'll do anything fun or interesting is obviously, you know, unknown, because it is WWE, but I definitely want to see him move up and become at least a strong mid-card presence. Hopefully going into SummerSlam and get him in a big matchup. You know, maybe even on the main card. I know there's been rumors of Rey Mysterio coming back. I don't know if that's still in cards. You know, All In shows still got to happen, and that's after SummerSlam. So if Rey comes back, you know, I did my own little way too early SummerSlam car prediction, and I had Almas versus Ray. But now that I think about it, you know, All In's probably got to happen before Ray comes back. So, but that would definitely be a fun and interesting feud to help elevate Almas for sure.
I'm heard there a lot of people speculating it could be Styles' next opponent.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Rusev, I think this is a one and done. Oh, yeah. I just don't see. I mean, who else could? I mean, we'll talk about, you know, some Nakamura, what's going on with him later on, but I don't think we're going to get him again. No, they can't do that again.
Some more Joe, but
Joe. I mean, well, Joe's on the show. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Joe, we talked about Joe before being the opponent for Styles after the Nakamura feud. So,
yep.
I mean, that could happen. I don't know, but Almas definitely needs to get to a higher profile program. Absolutely. We both agree on that for sure. All right. Next pre-show match was a tables match between the New Day and Sanity. And this is a pretty good little pre-show match here, and we had the tables that, you know, being used, lots of action. Eric Young looks so silly here, especially with his boots untied like that. He just looks so silly, but these guys worked hard. Great table bump at the end to finish the match. Sanity got the win. So that was good for them. It's easy for them to put them over in a tables match when nobody does a job. So they get a win. I guess this feud will probably continue, and I got no problem with this. Your thoughts on the Sanity New Day stuff?
Oh, it was a good tables matches. I think the stipulation could be a terrible hindrance to a match. I think they did a pretty good job here. It's, you know, when there's a tag or a trios match, tables matches can be fun, and this is one of those examples. And I thought they did a decent job of teasing, but not over teasing. And they didn't go too long. It was basically a sprint. I like the dive sequence. Kofi's always got great dives, and Xavier hit a nice one with him there. And Big E teased the spear through the table, the apron spear. But it's funny because I think all three guys would have flown over the table if he had hit it, unless he wanted to spike DDT himself on his head through the table, which wouldn't be the first time he's done that, but. But yeah, it was a good little match, and Sanity had a nice, solid, believable, strong win at the end. Good table bump at the end there. And I'm with you on Eric Young. My brother Dustin tweeted that he said something like, "Look at Eric Young and try not to laugh," because he always brings up how he remembers Eric Young being the comedy worker and character in TNA, so it's pretty hard for him to take him seriously. And I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people too. So, but
yeah. But they've done a good job in rehabbing him.
He's fine. He's a solid worker, does well for the character. I mean, the Sanity character is pretty absurd. Not that there aren't other absurd acts in WWE, but it's a little silly. He does a decent job and has had some good matches since he's been there. So I'm not trashing him too much, but he is pretty goofy.
Yeah. Goofy facials. And, Alexander Wolf, the underrated guy in that whole thing anyway. So, and it was pretty fun here. And we really got to get that Big E, Killian Dain singles match somehow, some way out of all this.
Yes. Yes.
We really do. All right, now as normal, sure. The pay-per-views go. Normally, they start off with a hot opener. Usually like your work rate match could be the opener, or Intercontinental title match, stuff like this. Well, tonight it was the Raw Tag Title match with Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt against the B Team, Bo Dallas, Curtis Axel. I was shocked when I thought this was the opening match. It surprised me. They went out and had a fine little short match. B Team is really starting to grow on me. I mean, they're getting over the fans too. And they strapped them up. They gave them the titles. And after a little mistake with Matt and Bray, and they got the titles. Charlie interviewed them, and they did a goofy little interview, and the fans were cheering them. One thing I do want to mention about this match, though, is I loved how they teased the first Bray and Bo interaction. The fans kind of, were into it.
Sure.
Bo tags out. And then at the end, when they finally do something there against each other, there's like no build for it. It just happens. It's just hilarious. But B-Team won the titles. I think this is a transition. I'm thinking the Revival takes the belts off of them. They're starting to get behind the Revival lately. So I think we may have a change either tonight, tomorrow night on Raw, or tonight, if you listen to the show on Monday, or maybe a little bit down the road. But it feels good, though, for Axel and Bo to at least get the titles and get this little shine they've got, because they deserve it. They've worked hard, being the Miz's boys and now doing this, and they've gotten it over. They got their own t-shirts out of the deal, for God's sake. So props to them for doing that. So your thoughts on the match and the B Team. How long are they gonna be champions?
It was a decent little match. I think it was weird for it to be the opener. A theme of the show was I didn't really care much about any of this stuff, and this is, a good example. But the B Team have worked hard, and I'm glad that they won the belts for a couple of reasons. One, they've worked hard, and it's fun to get a little title reign there at least. And two, I like the idea of they're sort of a believable team to beat Bray and Matt, because Bray and Matt are kind of a unique team. And the way the tag division has been, they've been kind of building it up. So there's like anybody can beat anybody kind of formula, and it just, it, you know, I sort of believed that they could beat him, you know, partly because, you know, one of those singles matches too, but, and it opens up where tag division could be more competitive and, you know, opens up hierarchy a little bit and kind of, you know, doesn't, you know, now you don't go in thinking, oh, you know, this is just going to be an easy win for so-and-so. So I do like that to an extent. As far as the B team goes, you know, like I said, you know, I think those guys have worked really hard the last year and a half, and I'm with you. I think you know, the Revival might be the next tag champs. I didn't really think about that in the last few days until you brought that up just now, because they have beaten Roman and Bobby in those few matches on TV, they're starting to get a little push and a little nod, and I think we might see the Revival win the belts as early as Monday night. I think you're right. I think the B team championship reign is not going to last terribly long. You know, we've got 5 weeks till SummerSlam, so they, you know, they might get one or two more weeks. I think they might lose it here pretty quickly, and I think the Revival is probably the team to beat up.
It seems like they're trying that. There may, I don't know if it's just, you know, looked that way, and, you know, there's been thoughts, people teasing it and stuff. And they haven't really, the company really hasn't officially teased it yet, but a faction of Dolph and Drew in the Revival could be something. It could, I mean, it would be like a Horseman type deal.
Yeah, it would. Yes, it would.
And it would work.
It would, yeah, for sure.
It would definitely work if they did something like that. So we'll see. Now, Matt and Bray, Matt did a cryptic tweet talking about basically this could be the end of the line for us. So are we going to get a split here between these two?
Could happen. Could happen. They might have a do a big time Vulcan Universe match at SummerSlam. You know.
Oh God, we don't need that feud again. God knows we don't need that feud again. And how interesting is all this, you know, seeing, you know, these two teams on the show fighting for the tag titles while the Usos are barely on SmackDown and the Bar can't even get on SmackDown.
I know.
Think about this. Sheamus and Cesaro are two of the best television wrestlers in the company and they can't get on television.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy. It's crazy.
The two biggest losers in the draft, the teams of the Bar and the
Usos.
Yes,
yes, very much so. Very much so.
Oh. Man, Kurt Angle was interviewed next, talking about everybody's favorite wrestler, Brock Lesnar. It's hard to say that. And he said that Brock doesn't want to come back, which is a work, but everybody can believe that. And Kurt said that Brock doesn't want to wrestle anybody, and said that Brock must show up on Raw tomorrow, agree to a title shot, or he's going to be stripped of the title. So I guess we'll be getting Brock on Raw tomorrow night, and the build up SummerSlam.
I guess so. One thing noteworthy is all the fans that are yes chan after that. So I mean, he's real.
Oh, the fans
they
went
hate
nuts.
That guy. Nobody likes him. He sucks.
Yeah, I mean. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because we'll talk in a few minutes about who is probably his opponent's going to be, and that's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
Yep.
All right. Next match, Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin, who was fresh from
Constable Baron Corbin.
Constable Corbin, excuse me. Fresh from his stint working in the bar at the Wrecking Crew Brew Pub. Or any bar name you want to insert here. Ben wearing these silver acrylic tights, I noted on Twitter, made his bulge look even bigger on the television. These two guys have had a fun little feud in the past few weeks. Balor getting his little cheap shots in on Corbin. Corbin's, you know, done pretty well here. Good little match, you know, nothing wrong with it. Again, another short match, you know, more like a, this is like a house show type match. There's nothing wrong with that. Balor gets a small package, no pun intended, to get the win. And, hey, I mean, he didn't need the job to Corbin. Corbin's one of these guys where his gimmick right now I don't think winning or losing really much matters to, for him, because he's in his gimmick, so he can get by. He kind of like corporate Kane, you know, how when he was, so he didn't have to win or lose all the time.
Right.
So, and he definitely needed to beat Balor here. That's for sure. So Balor stayed protected. They had their finish. You know, who knows where to go from here? But your thoughts on the match and the Constable Corbin character, how it's evolved since the last time we talked about it?
The match is, you know, the match was good. I really like the big boss man spots that Corbin is put into his game. And, you know, it's those are good spots for big man wrestlers. And Corbin's really taken to it. And he's gotten pretty good in the ring. It was a good little match. And I liked the finish. It was a clever, well-done finish. And like you said, Corbin's not a guy who, you know, needs to win. He can still stay over because his gimmick is sort of an easy one to loathe. I've really enjoyed the Constable Corbin gimmick. I think his look has improved tremendously. You know, he's moved up from being somebody who works in a hip pizza bar. In a gentrified part of town to a more high class. to a more high class part of downtown, you know, with the bar. Or whatever.
Yeah, Corbin could definitely tell you about the micro brews.
So you know, he's upgraded his restauranteering, I guess. His look is better. And that's helped him. And I always thought he was a fun sort of absurd character, even when he was supposed to be treated a little bit more seriously. I think he's intended to be treated a little bit more goofily this time around. I think that's part of the intention, at least, or at least at times. I enjoy him. You know, I think he's a fun character, and as long as he's not too in your face, which I think they've done a pretty good job. He's not been swallowing swallowing Monday nights too much or anything like that with his presence and being, you know, overly all over the show or anything like that. So I think he's been a fun character and gimmick. And like I said, you know, he's actually a pretty good wrestler when he wants to be. And this was a good match.
I think that's what her corporate came wanting thing us too, is the fact that, the authority was on all the whole show.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, that does have an effect on stuff like that. But yeah, Corbin's much better now than he was before. God, when he was just the old regular Baron Corbin. Ooh.
Yep.
You know. So they have rehabbed him in a way. All right. Speaking of Kane, next we have the Bludgeon Brothers beating up Team Hell No backstage. And Kane got hit in the knee with the mallet before Paige ran out and got everybody away. So setting up an injury angle here to set up the match later, which, you know, we'll talk about the match and explains why they did this. So, all right. Next, we have the SmackDown Women's title match with James Ellsworth in a shark cage as Carmella defending against Asuka. And God almighty. I will say this. This was short and it was entertaining.
Yeah.
And James Ellsworth was great here. But, and the finish was cute with Carmella hitting, throwing Asuka to the cage. But, oh my God, they got to get the belt off Carmella. We talked about this last show. It's just bringing down the whole division. And Asuka's being sacrificed for the whole thing. That's just so odd after the whole NXT run, which we talked about in last show. Yeah, just so odd to see Asuka just being sacrificed for all this. But again, at least it was entertaining. And Ellsworth got the shit kicked out of him after the match for his trouble. So he's been the saving grace in this whole deal. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, Ellsworth is funny. He always is. Unintentionally and intentionally. Well, it's intentional at this point, but. And pretty much always has been, but it's always funny. This match was absurd. Like it was somewhat entertaining, and I think it also shows that even though WWE likes the Carmella character, I don't think they're confident in her in-ring ability at all. So they have to give the smoke and mirrors approach.
Should they be?
Yeah, exactly. You know, she stinks at it. You know, she's decent at eating offense, although there was one part where Asuka did a running knee and Carmella wildly avoided it and then still sold it. That was bizarre. I mean, yeah. She's, you know, typically you'd think, you know, she'd be better than Alexa Bliss at eating offense, but tonight she really wasn't. That was kind of a shot at both women's champions there. But Alexa wasn't bad tonight. We'll get to that. That match was also sort of similar to this one in terms of smoke and mirrors. But this was just kind of a whatever match. And I just don't understand. I mean, I don't know what the end game is here with Carmella. You know, I don't know. I mean, SummerSlam's the second biggest show of the year. I mean, what are they going to do with her as champion? I just don't know. I mean, are they going to bring Charlotte back and have her beat Carmella? I mean, nobody gives a shit about that. Like, I mean, the match will stink.
Well, Charlotte's coming back at SummerSlam.
I know she'll be there, you know. I mean, but Carmella is not capable of having a good match. She can have an entertaining one, sort of like this one, although I wasn't completely enamored with it. But she's just not. And I like the character. I enjoy the character well enough, but it's just she's very
good in her character.
She's just not,
as far as everything but the ring, in ring,
you know,
for her.
A big problem with her is she's too much like a Lay Cool or somebody back in the earlier era of the women's divisions, where, you know, they're so good.
That's the Iconics,
right?
Now,
exactly. You know, she was so good at the character work and stuff. You know, but the ring work wasn't all that great, and usually the character sucked. So it was nice to see somebody have good character work like a Lay Cool or Maurice or whatever. You know, this is kind of the conversation Dylan and I had recently about it, and he kind of brought that point up, and I sort of agree. You know, it's just, she doesn't really fit in that well. I mean, it's nice to have different types of characters and that dynamic, and I do think that's a good thing in ways. But as the champion for a significant reign, I don't think it's a good idea. And you know, when she's getting outworked and outclassed by multiple women who are, you know, or at least there's evidence of her not being nearly as good as multiple women who aren't being used. Even somebody like a Naomi is much better than she is, and you know. Naomi's,
Becky Lynch. Obviously
Becky Lynch and you know, Sasha and Bayley are you know, getting good TV time and are building to something big, probably, hopefully, at SummerSlam. But, you know, they're obviously better than she is. And you know, and somebody like a Ruby Riott, who unfortunately, you know, got hurt and sprained her MCL. But, you know, that's somebody else who's better. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. She's just not fit to be champion, or at least not for.
She's got the look. That's the thing too. She has the look they like.
She absolutely does, and that's the thing that's going to continue to happen. You know, and you know, when
Asuka doesn't have the look they like, she's the complete opposite of the Vince's Kevin Dunn of the world.
Yeah.
So that's why you're getting what you get.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, the Charlotte getting the hinge on Carmella in here at SummerSlam. So.
I can pass on that.
Yeah. I think we all could about now. All right, let's move on. And I got, I mean, Ellsworth, I think, is still going to stay around a little bit. I think he has to stay till she
wins
the title. Long term, but he'll be there as long as she's got the belt. All right, next match, U.S. heavyweight title. Jeff Hardy against Shinsuke Nakamura in a match that was supposed to take place on television a couple weeks ago before Nakamura got bit by the police dog in California, which is one of the weirdest stories in wrestling history. Just so weird. But he's fine now. They had the match, and this was something. This was not what I was expecting. Nakamura got him in the balls at the beginning, before the match started. Then popped him into Kinshasa immediately and won in 5 seconds. And everybody's like, wow, who'd Jeff Hardy piss off? But the way this show was going, they had to have short matches, and way went way short on this one. It was interesting. Nakamura, I mean, this was good for what Nakamura's character is, I guess. But do you think that we got cheated here? Would you say cheated is a word to use? Or what are your thoughts on this 5-second match?
Well, no, I didn't think I got cheated. I didn't want to see the match, so I was happy. seriously, yeah, I was glad. And I actually kind of liked the booking of it. And, you know, especially the post-match was kind of fun. And that'll be interesting to see how that goes. But, I like that the low blow actually paid off and actually got Nakamura some sort of success out of it instead of it just sort of being a goofy gimmick. Now it actually helps him win things, which I appreciate and like. And that's sort of good booking, I guess. Even if you think it's silly, I think it's sort of, they've at least allowed that low blow gimmick to at least be effective instead of just, you know, the typical heel, wacky heel who likes to fondle guy, you know, people's balls with a low blow or something. but it's a gimmick that's actually, you know, worth it. And I did like it. I thought it was a good heel way to win the title, and he needs a title. And I, you know, him being U.S. champion is probably his ceiling, in my opinion. I don't think he's proven to be much special as a big-time main eventer. But as a solid mid-card presence, I think he's fine. And he's proven to be a little bit more interesting as a heel character and so on and so forth. So I'm perfectly fine with how they did that.
And that's not the biggest story coming out of this whole segment.
It's not. Yeah, that's right.
As it got out a little bit before this, that Randy Orton was backstage. There were people already thinking that, oh, he's going to take the place of Kane, team with Daniel Bryan against the Bludgeon Brothers. No, his music hits. He comes out fresh from his Disney cruise adventures. Because, yes, he was on a Disney cruise for a while there with his wife and kids. Hilarious that Randy Orton's on Disney cruises. But they were. And he looked refreshed. Somebody noted he looked like he was 27 again. So he looked refreshed. He came out there. Fans went completely apeshit. As you know, just completely nuts for Randy Orton. And, of course, Orton and Nakamura have previous history. So Nakamura standing on the table with his newly won title, looking tentative, wondering what the hell's going on. And then Orton grabbed Hardy and kicked him in the balls. Well, stomped him in the balls. While Nakamura was all confused. And the fans were too. Because the fans were like, what? And some started to boo, but it looks like we're going to go Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy here? Or are we going to do a three-way feud? Or where do you think we go now?
Probably a three-way feud because it's SummerSlam and you got to get everybody on the card for some reason. But you know, I'm hoping it's a heel Randy Orton because I prefer heel Randy, the babyface Randy.
So does he.
Yeah, I know he does. and Randy Orton's one of the few guys who has, what's the word? Oh, God, I don't want to, power to actually, decide what he wants to do as his character. So
creative
control. There you go, freedom of control. You know, he has a little bit of that. It wouldn't shock me if that was his idea to turn heel. So I prefer Randy as a heel. And I hope that's what it was. Sometimes that isn't the case with Randy because his character has been known to RKO people out of nowhere and stuff. But a low blow in this case, I think that might be a heel turn. So I'm interested to see how that goes. I hope it isn't a three-way feud. And the last time he and Jeff Hardy had a match, it stunk. So I'm kind of, about that. But, you know, we'll see. The only thing I'm kind of looking forward to is, a heel Randy Orton might be something good to come out of it.
Well, I mean, give AJ an opponent.
Yeah, that's true.
They've worked before, but,
never had a program.
Not with Orton as a not with Orton as a clear heel. No. So, That would be interesting. All right. Next, we have Kevin Owens and Braun Strowman in the steel cage match. You knew something was going to happen here. They've been doing all the crazy stuff going in. Strowman turning over Kevin Owens' car. Strowman with a porta potty with Kevin Owens inside of it, which made him turn blue of all things.
Yeah, it was odd.
Well, they do have that blue toilet dot.
That's true. Know,
that goes. I think that's what they were going for. They didn't want to have him covered in shit. If this would have been 10, 15 years ago, he would have been covered in shit. But this is the new WWE. Can't do that. So anyway, we get the cage match, and boy, this was something. Owens was hilarious here. I love when he handcuffed Strowman to the rope and all the stuff he was doing. And Strowman, you know, trying his best to get free. Owens kissing him bye, waving at him. And Strowman, of course, just breaks the cuff off. And then just runs and climbs the cage like it's nothing. Just what a freak. He grabs Owens. And he chokeslams him off the top of the cage. 20 years ago, folks. 20 years ago. 20 years and a few weeks here, because it was like the end of June, was King of the Ring 98 in the same building.
Listen to Between the Sheets, folks.
Yeah, Between the Sheets, where we talk about that for that week. And Mick Foley did the dot off the Hell in a Cell through a table. Well, Kevin Owens took a choke slam through a table off the top of the cage. Now, here's the difference between then and now. Then, the tables were nowhere near as secure as they are now. In fact, now they pretty much have like little airbags up under them. So if they know they're going to break it. But still, there is the possibility that he could miss the table. And B, Foley did a bump where he turned in the air. Owens was straight flat in the air, went down. You know, it worked out perfectly what they did. They couldn't have had it work out better. So, what is it still dangerous to do something like that? Of course. You know, you're going from that high up. But the fact that everything worked out great as far as how it went was the positive in that. But Strowman laughed it off. Fans are going crazy. I saw people online saying, that's not how a babyface is supposed to act. Well, Strowman's been Strowman the whole time. I mean, he never, quote-unquote, turned. He's always been Braun Strowman. The fans just have gotten into him.
That's true.
And they love him. So, it's like Austin. Austin never turned. He just was, the fans just got into him. So, it's a different type of deal. But Strowman was great here and everything he did. Owens, I mean, love him or hate him, the guy's been... He's been doing some great stuff in this feud with Braun. This may be Owens' best feud in the company. So and his whole run there, as far as on the main roster. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting where they go from here. But what's your thoughts on the whole Braun-Owens cage match deal?
It was a fun little match. You know, I was a little annoyed. I'm not annoyed about Braun as a acting, doing heel stuff. I'm not. But with the match, I'm not a massive traditionalist when it comes to this stuff, but I was a little like, oh, Owens is working as the babyface here, sort of. And it's more of a smash structure thing than it is. Just because and they did that twice. They did that in the Nia Alexa match too, and I think it's a little risky to do a babyface monster with a cowardly heel twice in one show. You know, and both matches were fun, and we'll get to the later match. But this was a fun match, and both guys were very good in it. And of course, the finish was completely insane. And you know, the thing that's sort of forgotten is Owens wins the match.
Yes, that's right. He won and hit the table.
And then Braun tweeted out after what did he say? He said, oh, Owens won the match. I didn't even know that or something. He tweeted something clever after the match. So sarcastic. But it wasn't as crazy as the Foley bump. Nothing really, you know, ever will be in terms of cage bumps, because, you know, now they have the crash. But, like, I will say this, that table did not have as much of a comfy crash pad as those Hell in a Cell bumps do.
Yeah.
Those Hell in a Cell bumps have, like, you know, stuntman trampolines or some crap that they fall on. This table looked relatively normal compared to the ridiculous crash pads that they have for the Cell matches. So this was a little bit, I feel like it might have been a little less safe than normal in terms of, you know, whatever they have, you know, typically for the Hell in a Cell matches. But I also will say this too, and this is worth pointing out, as Dylan and I have also talked about this as well, as, you know, especially when you watch like 205 Live and Mustafa Ali's taking 75 bumps on the floor and on the mat now every week. Those mats have got to be nice and comfy nowadays, because, man alive, they do.
Oh, we had one in the last match.
I mean,
in the next match, excuse me.
They do all sorts of crazy shit in these matches, you know. And
oh,
so Owen's going through that table. You know, the mat's probably pretty padded too now. But still a crazy bump, still a great bump, still sort of the Foley of his time in terms of his bumping in a lot of ways. You know, he's similar to Foley and Tommy Dreamer in that he's a bigger guy in size, and his body can take a lot of punishment because of how his just because of his biology in terms of how he's built. So, you know, he can take crazy wacky bumps, and his body can absorb it a little bit better than somebody else can. So he's sort of the guinea pig for crazy shit like that. I don't know if that's a good, a good or a bad thing, but he is. It was a fun little match for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fans are brawling.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's a fact. So definitely gonna be interesting where they go with him next. Now we have our tag title for the SmackDown side here. Bludgeon Brothers defending against Daniel Bryan and Kane, but we start off with just Daniel Bryan, as Kane was selling the beatdown from earlier. So Bryan's going alone. And for this type of deal, it was pretty good. Bryan, the story of Bryan fighting off the two big guys on his own, of course, works for what he does. Everybody looked pretty good here. And then Kane come out with his walking boot, which is hilarious, because it's Kane. And he was selling it. And he got the hot tag. He started clean house. He could get that tombstone because of his boot. Bryan comes in. The fag goes nuts. And Rowan then took him out. They hit their doomsday device deal. And Harper pinned him clean. 1, 2, 3. So there's your finish. Bludgeon Brothers retain. They have the injury deal to set, you know, to explain how they got beat. But this is just an interesting deal here, all the way through. I don't know. What's your thoughts?
It was odd. It was bizarre. I didn't expect it to happen. I expected Bludgeon Bros to win. I did. I didn't expect it to go the route that they took it. I don't know why they did the injury angle with Kane. I sort of theorize that he's got this big campaign and he might not want to get too physical. And I know it's weird. Like, it's not like you can't run a campaign if you're hurt. But, I mean, do you really want him breaking his leg or something and having to wheel himself out in a wheelchair at a campaign? I know that sounds far-fetched, but maybe that's part of it. That definitely could be part of it. I also think that it was bizarre to do this because fans have, you know, really eaten up the Team Hell No reunion. And you know, they don't even get the – you know, big time title match that they wanted to see and that they built to and that they closed SmackDown 2, 3, or 4 weeks in a row with. And they don't even get it, you know, because 3/4 of the match Kane's out. You know, it's weird. It's not even bad. It was just weird. Like, it was just bizarre. It was bizarre. But the match itself was pretty good. You know, Kane, when he came in, was inoffensive and, you know, sold well enough and they did the doomsday finish and, you know, and I expected the Bludgeon Bros to win, so you know that didn't shock me, but it was just a weird, a weird sequence of events that led to the ending. I didn't expect it to go this route. I thought it would be a 10 to 15 minute match that was competitive with maybe a banana peel or maybe a miscommunication with Bryan and Kane, or even Kane chokeslamming Bryan or Miz getting involved, something like that. I didn't expect it to go this route, though. It was weird.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking that I thought there was gonna be some type of maybe screw finish or something like that. Not Bryan losing clean. That kind of surprised. I thought Kane might have lost, be the one that would have lost clean in the whole deal. So that's weird.
Yeah,
that was weird. But with the stories going around that Bryan's re-signed with the company, what a way to rub in everybody's faces that didn't want him to re-sign, have him job the Bludgeon Brothers on pay-per-view.
He's bulletproof, man. That's the one thing that helps Daniel Bryan. He's become enough transcendent of a star where, you know, he reminds me a lot in some ways of somebody like The Rock. You know, The Rock lost tons and tons and tons of matches clean.
Mm-hmm.
People forget. I mean, I think The Rock lost to Rhino clean one time during the Alliance angle. Like,
he lost to Hurricane more than once.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so Daniel Bryan can lose matches. I know it annoys people, but it's like, whatever. I mean, if he do it way too much, it'll get a little annoying, even for me, but I'm fine with this. Bludgeon Bros are a good tag team. They're good tag champs. I expected them to win. I think it was a good idea that they won. I just didn't expect them to win the way that they did. I'm not even really that upset that he lost clean or anything. I didn't expect that that they'd go the injury angle route with Kane. That was what sort of shocked me.
Yeah. All right, next we have Roman Reigns heading to the ring when the B team come out celebrating and saying that if Roman won, he could be part of the B team, with Roman looking at him like they were crazy. Funny. And then we have Roman against Bobby. And, Bob.
Bob, yeah.
The feud on television, after what they had been doing with Bobby Lashley and the Sami Zayn feud, they totally rehabbed him. I mean, in this whole deal. And I've really enjoyed the build-up to this match. I was shocked it wasn't the main event. Really was. I understand why they didn't do it, but I was shocked that it wasn't. The match was strong. But the crowd was trying to shit on it, which was funny. And, of course, they chanted Rusev Day, which they chanted Rusev Day louder in this match than they did when Rusev actually wrestled in his match. But, I really dug this match. There were some hard spots. The bump that Lashley took from the top rope straight to the floor was more dangerous than the Kevin Owens bump, in my opinion, because Lashley could have landed on his head.
Well, he could have broken his collarbone or something.
That could have been nasty. A guy his size doing that. And then the overhead belly-to-belly on Roman over the German announce table, that was a spot that could have been bad. I mean, we got all their key moves, and then Lashley got the win.
With the spear.
With the spear, no less. Beating Roman with his move. For those of you who don't follow me on Twitter, I tweet on April 7th, and I think I mentioned on the Mania post show, that Mania reaction show, that the plan was that Brock Lesnar was going to face Bobby Lashley at SummerSlam for the Universal title. 3 months later, the chickens have come home to roost. That looks like that's the match that's going to happen. And it makes sense because it's never happened before. And it's very believable. It's the story's there. Brock's, you know, MMA guy. Lashley is a better MMA fighter than Brock was, probably, in all fairness. Lesnar was UFC heavyweight champion, but Lashley had more fights and, you know, just was all around better. So you got that whole angle to work with. And there's a lot that can run with this story. And I think Lashley's going to be really good in this program. Brock's going to be Brock and all that jazz, but I'm kind of looking forward to see how this is going to play out. And I firmly believe that I think Daniel Cormier is going to be involved. Daniel Cormier is a huge wrestling fan, so he'll be willing to do anything if they ask him to. And since Brock and Cormier are going to fight down the line, So what a way to set it up than to have Cormier actually cost Brock the Universal Heavyweight title. And I think we may get a new champion at SummerSlam out of this deal with Lashley.
Good God, so, if that happens, wow.
Yeah, I firmly believe that Cormier is going to be at SummerSlam and get involved. So I don't know. We'll see how that works. But Roman Reigns, man, for a guy who is supposed to be this, you know, super protected dude, he's always losing, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's jumped on our throats. He's just always winning. I like the match too, Chris, but I got to say this. The aging of the Roman Reigns matches lately have been terrible. I mean, this match should have been 10 minutes with them hitting all their crazy spots. Like, they should have shaved, like, 7 minutes off this match. The opening minutes were stunk. Like, I mean, the work wasn't bad, but, like, the crowd was clearly getting in their crowd gimmicky crap. They should have just gone 10, 12 minutes and did their crazy shit. It would have ruled. Like, the match was still good because they did that stuff. But it was too. Like,
well, here's where your point gets more credence. Is look at that hot angle they did Raw on Raw.
Yeah, the brawl. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why start out slow?
Yeah,
exactly. All right, go ahead. Yeah, that's the thing too. You're perfectly right on that.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And you know, they did the great spots, like the near fall off the brainbuster was great. It was sort of a brainbuster jackhammer variation, but. You know, the awesome Superman punch counter, they had the suplex over the table, the crazy Lashley bump to the floor. Like, it was just a great 4, 5, or 6 minutes at the end there. It was just like, it was frustrating because it's like, they could have easily done all that in 10 or 12 minutes. And in a lot of ways, they really got to book these Roman Clash of Titans matches. There are certain guys he can work longer matches with and it would be okay. But when Roman's working with a guy like Bobby Lashley, just do a Brock Lesnar Goldberg type Clash of Tiles styles match and do crazy shit for 10 minutes. Like, that helps him get over. That makes that the fans will inevitably get into it. Like, it avoids the annoying like fans who have to, you know, stroke themselves and get themselves over because they're assholes. Like, the agenting has just been putrid and. Someone needs to fire an agent or something, or somebody needs to change an agent or whatever, because it's getting a little annoying for me personally. Because Roman's matches have been hurt by the agenting lately, but the match was good.
Yeah, I'm curious. I really haven't seen who's producing his matches lately. I mean, I know that Tyson Kidd's Seth Rollins is producer.
Yes,
but I don't know who. Who's doing the Roman?
I'm not
stuff.
Sure. It's so. Probably Michael Hayes. He's an idiot. I mean, it was a good match, and I think you're right. It'll be Lashley and Lesnar, and it'll be hilarious if Cormier gets involved. That'd be really funny. Boy, that would be weird. I wonder how UFC fans would feel about that, because there's plenty of UFC guys these days who can't stand wrestling. I hate those kind of
people. Well, good luck with that, because I know.
Cormier
is a big wrestling fan, Brock being in wrestling.
I don't think it's crazy. I mean, I do think it's crazy, but I don't think it's crazy that that you think it might happen. I definitely think Brock and Bob is the match going to happen. Now, I think it could be a great match too, for what it's worth. I think it'll be a little bit harder for Brock to big boy Bob Lashley. So that'll yes. be fascinating to see.
He don't want to take that into a shoot.
No, I
don't think it would work.
That'll be fascinating to see. I don't think he'll be opening up Bob Lashley with an elbow. I think that's probably unlikely. That'll be fascinating to see how that goes. I mean, I hate Brock Lesnar at this point, but it's a little bit interesting. You know, I wish he would get the damn belt off of him, but. You know, maybe Bobby Lashley does win the belt. That just goes on to somebody else. You know, he's been rehabbed a little bit. Well, you know, I do think at the end, Zayn did help them, and I think the Roman feud has helped him some because fans enjoy the Clash of the Titans style builds and stuff. But Lashley as champ, I don't know, man. I don't know about that. We'll see.
Well, I mean, he's got the look that
yes, he does. Like. That's very true.
So I he was good in TNA.
Yeah, he was. He was good there. He was. I prefer him as a heel, and he was okay tonight. You know, he was solid tonight. You know, he was pretty decent tonight.
Who's saying? I mean, that's the thing. He doesn't have. I mean, in this feud, he's going to be the babyface. You know, pretty much. But if he just beats the character he's been in this Roman deal, where he's not really been a babyface or a heel, kind of. He's just been Bobby Lashley. He'd be fine.
Right.
And then, you know, they could use him to, you know, do him and Braun, down the line. That could be somewhere they go, is to do, you know, Lashley and Braun.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, that's just the theory on my part, so we'll see how it goes. But. And Roman Reigns, I think where we're going here is we're going to have some deal here where it's going to be Roman and Seth against Dolph and Drew, or maybe even somehow, some way. The Shield versus Dolph, Drew, and somebody else at SummerSlam with Dean coming back.
Yeah, could be.
I think that's where they're building.
Could be.
They're building it up with Drew, man. Drew and Dolph as a tandem, man. There's something going to happen there that they got to do with Roman. They've done stuff on television, but they haven't really delved into it
yet. Right.
So.
Could be.
Something's going to happen. I think it's got to be coming. Because like you said, they got to have, you know, everybody on these shows, so. We're going to have multi-man matches.
All over the place, for sure.
Yeah, SummerSlam. Right. Next, we have an Extreme Rules match. On Extreme Rules, for the Raw Women's Championship, Alexa Bliss defending against Nia Jax. With Ronda Rousey at ringside after buying a ticket. She'd been sitting there all night with her husband, Travis Brown. And when Reigns and Lashley didn't main event, I thought immediately this was going to be the main event.
I did too.
Nope, yeah. It's just the next match. And then it made sense because then we saw, well, you know, the Iron Man was going to be the main event. But like this was like Asuka and Carmella, like you said, but I thought this was a whole lot better. Lots of stuff going on because it's an Extreme Rules match. You can get away with it because that's the gimmick. And Natalya got involved. Mickey James was looking amazing tonight. Got involved. I mean, they were beating each other up. The Natalya Mickey James stuff was probably the best thing in the whole thing. They were just beating the crap out of each other. And then Ronda comes jump over the ring, and the fans are nuts for Ronda Rousey, folks.
Yes, they are.
They love her so much. She has gotten over, and she's great. And in this role, she was really great in because she was just a maniac going after Alexa. And I mean. Yeah, it was. This was hot. This was a hot segment. I mean, the match was what it was, but it was chaotic. It was very strong. Ronda, like $1 million, beating up Alexa, setting up SummerSlam. I thought this was the best stuff on the whole show. I mean, it's all together. So, what were your thoughts on this whole segment?
Yeah, it was a good little match. I think. You know, it was the second of it was similar to the first women's match. It was better, I agree, but it was also similar to the Owens and Strowman match. Then it was a monster babyface for the cowardly heel, and having two of those matches on the same show, I'm not sure if that's a great idea. But the crowd really got into it. It was, you know, got the chaos, and Mickey James took a bunch of crazy bumps and didn't really know what to do because Ronda was legitimately woman handling her, I guess.
And Mickey James was wearing an outfit. I mean, she's wearing these short leather shorts, but she was wearing a top that very easily could have got undone in the back.
Yes, yes. Yeah. She was getting thrown around all over the ringside. Yes. Great brawling between the ladies there, and you know, it was a pretty chaotic scene. And Alexa Bliss is, I guess, her favorite weapon is a kendo stick now that she won that kendo stick war with Bayley a year ago, and now that's sort of her. she's like the Sandman of the women's division now or something. That's her weapon of choice. It was a fun little match, and of course Alexa retained. And you know, I would imagine that we're going to get Alexa versus Ronda for the belt at SummerSlam, I would guess.
Absolutely.
You know, for a minute there before the show, I thought they might book it in a way where Ronda screws Nia over, and then, you know, or you know, at least clearly, you know, not deliberately, but clearly it looks like she basically screwed her over, and then they do a three way. But I don't think that's the case now. I think Nia is moving down a little bit, and they're going to make room for Ronda and Alexa. It looks like.
Yeah, I mean that's where they, I mean it was had to go anyway, and Nia was just there as a stopgap for everything. So, you know, we'll see where she goes from here. But yeah, I mean Ronda and Alexa is the program they got to go with, and that match I am definitely in on that one, because Alexa has this, you know, style about her. And she'll hit you hard. She takes bumps, and Rousey's gonna be an interesting opponent for her, no doubt.
One of my biggest things with Alexa is she's not a terribly great base. It'll be fascinating how that is with Ronda. Ronda's great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, she's really good one of the better rookies I've seen. But she's also still green, and I don't know how safe it will be for Alexa if she doesn't base very well. They might need to really plan that sucker out.
I will say this for Alexa too. Alexa likes to pop them hard. She's a hard hitter.
Yep.
She'll get that back.
Yes, she will.
She does it to Ronda.
She will.
So, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued on that one. All right, they announced that Hardy and Nakamura's going to rematch on SmackDown Tuesday. That's predictable. So we got that. Next, we get the SmackDown title, or the WWE World Heavyweight title, excuse me. As AJ Styles defending against Rusev, and this was the best match on the show. It's AJ Styles, of course it should be. I mean, you put him in this type of match, Rusev's, you know, a great opponent for him. They go out, give him the time to work, and they'll do it. And I really enjoyed this match a lot. Rusev's in tremendous physical condition right now. That guy's really got himself into great shape. And, he's able to do stuff. Eight in English. It was solid on the outside. Now, dug his little ditty before the match he sang. And this match here is a definite proof of how AJ has all his finishers that he can use. And you can bite on all of them. And this is a perfect example because he used multiple ones here until he finally got the win. So, whether it's the calf crusher or the Springboard 450 or the phenomenal forearm or a Styles Clash or whatever. He's got all these different finishers that he can use to at his disposal. And he put, you know, Rusev away with the phenomenal forearm after, you know, I thought the 450 almost should have had him, and that was a great false finish. But really strong match. Rusev proved that he definitely belongs in that area. And I hope they do something with him, man. I hope they keep him, you know, on that tier. So, AJ retains, and he's now champion for over 250 days. So, where do we go from here?
Yeah, it was a very good match. I think it started a little bit slow. It was a little bit slow at first, and then they really picked things up. And I really liked I thought the match really picked up after Rusev countered a forearm to the mat with the kick to the head. That was a really great counter spot. The match really picked up, and you know, Aiden did the exposed turnbuckle. I don't know if that's going to lead to a split between he and Rusev. I hope not, but that's always a possibility with WWE. They love to break up groups and tandems.
It would hurt
and tag teams, and it would hurt Rusev too. By the way, it wouldn't just hurt Aiden; it would hurt Rusev.
No,
but that's always possible with them. I hope not. I loved that Rusev kicked out of the 450. I thought that was a great booking decision. It made him look strong in defeat. It made him look like a legitimate contender in the main event scene. You know, I thought coming out, I think it made both guys look strong at the end of the match. I think it was probably the best booked match. I'm a little worried about the Aiden involvement with the turnbuckle exposure and possible split between those two, but otherwise I thought it was a really well worked and booked match. Very good match. AJ Bertain with a forearm. Yeah, you know AJ's still champ. He's got a lot of options for challengers. I'm still on the Samoa Joe train in terms of predicting him as the next challenger. I still think that's a strong possibility going into SummerSlam. That's kind of what I expect. But AJ's still rolling as champ. And as he should be, he's a great ace, had another really good match. I'm expecting to see AJ versus Joe at SummerSlam, but like we've talked about, there's plenty of options, so we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I got 5 weeks to go, so never know where they're gonna go. If they break up Rusev and Aiden, yeah, it's gonna hurt both of them for sure, no doubt. So let's hope that doesn't happen. All right, next is our main event of the evening: 30-minute Iron Man match for the Intercontinental Title. Now, Dolph Ziggler defending against Seth Rollins. These two have worked on television a few times here lately. Really enjoyed this stuff. I thought this is a really good feud. In the ring, Dolph has been reborn since he's got with Drew, and this may have been the show made sense from a perspective of what they've been doing. And Seth basically is the top babyface, definitely on Raw, maybe even the whole company in some ways. I mean, Brian's Brian, but the fans love chant and burn it down. But this was interesting. The Pittsburgh fans, they started counting along with the clock, like very early in the match, like they did the Royal Rumble, but they were doing it every minute. And it got to the point where people backstage got pissed off, and they actually turned the clock off in the live crowd, which the crowd started chanting, "Fix the clock, fix the clock." And then when that didn't happen, they just started counting freely when they were not even close to the 10 second mark. They were doing the 10-9-8, count. And I think this really threw the guys off. I know it threw Seth Rollins off. And the reason why I know that is after the match, and after he got to the back and got to a phone or something, he tweeted out 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. So I knew it. That got into Seth's head. So that was just it took away from the match. And the match itself was interesting because they did a deal where Seth got 3 falls on Dolph, and then Dolph started Drew come in and started beating shit out of Rollins. And they kicked Drew out, but in the process, he had weakened Rollins so much, Dolph started picking up falls. Hitting him with moves, pinning him, hitting him with moves, pinning him. So they were doing a different type of formula for this match. And eventually, Dolph got up 4-3. And then Seth eventually tied it, go 4-4, and they go to a 30-minute draw. Now, normally in these Iron Man matches, I mean, I would have thought that it definitely would have been overtime, off the top. But, no. Kurt Angle comes out and announces that we're going to overtime. as we go to overtime, Drew pops up, gets involved, then Dolph gets zigzagged. And Dolph zigzags Seth, and boom, gets the pin. And he retains the title. And the fans are like, "What?" And what was funny about the whole thing is that the fans who early on had been doing this whole deal with the clock, but they got into the last few minutes of this match. They were, were doing what they were supposed to do. And just a weird, weird deal here. And the thing is that these two guys had a 27-minute match on television that was really strong. But, I mean, here it really didn't pick up until the end. I don't know. I don't know about this one. I mean, I had good expectations for this match because I've been enjoying their stuff. But man, this was just this is a weird deal, and this is definitely an agenting thing, but the crowd doing what they did definitely kind of, I think, threw everybody off. So, what was your thoughts on this whole spectacle?
It was a good match. It was a good match. It was, the crowd was bad. They were stupid. You know, I don't know if it would have mattered if anybody was in the match. They would have counted the clock down like a bunch of friggin' morons. Because this day and age, they just think they have to get themselves over for some reason. I don't understand it. It doesn't exist to me. It's very bizarre. It's hurt wrestling as a whole. The match was good. I didn't buy the first fall. I didn't buy that Rollins did the power bomb and then the La Majest draw and then win with the fall. I didn't buy it 5 minutes in. It wasn't that he got the fall 5 minutes in, is that I didn't buy him winning with that combination. Although I did buy the catapult into the sunset flip because it was late in the match. But that this particular fall I didn't buy. I liked the idea of McIntyre coming in and Dolph getting the falls, and they actually executed it fairly well, but there were an awful lot of falls to happen within the first 10, 12 minutes of the match. Too many, in my opinion. I mean, there were 7 falls that happened in like 12 minutes. Too many falls in 12 minutes. Way too many. You know, 4 or 5 is probably the limit there, maybe 4. But, you know, like, that's just way too many falls in that short amount of time. Match was good, you know, continued to get better as time went on, and the crowd got into it at the end. And I thought, I liked that Rollins didn't get the pin cover, you know, sometimes because the timing can be off or whatever. And he didn't get to even cover him. You know, he hit it, so you didn't have the whole trying to get the 3 count in before the, you know, the final second hit the clock. And I always agree, you know, with you that I always think that it should just be sort of like the truth that if it goes to a draw, you just go to overtime anyways, no matter what. But, you know, Kurt Angle came out, and then McIntyre came back out, and they just ended it with a zigzag. It was really weird. You know, I thought Ambrose, maybe they were working us with the Ambrose injury and maybe he'd come back or something. And I was wrong. Whatever. Who cares? But, you know, it was just a weird ending. Just weird. It was kind of ended. It kind of felt like something that would happen in like a big Raw episode of Raw, you know, like we'll have a big, you know, Iron Man match to close the show. And it felt a little weird to happen on a pay-per-view, but I think you might be right. When I think that might be where Roman's headed. I think they might do Roman and Seth versus these guys or something. And maybe they'll do 6-man and add a 3rd guy, and maybe Dean will come back in time for SummerSlam. I don't know, something like that, maybe. It was weird. I mean, it was a good match, but the booking and agenting and whatnot was a little off. And of course, the crowd did not help matters for the majority of the match.
Yeah, it definitely was something. That was just a weird deal. And I think you're right, though, the crowd. I think the crowd was going to count no matter what. Because I think the crowd, they have kind of done the count so much with the Royal Rumble, and you just put a clock in the building for them to look at. They're just going to do
it. Yep.
Yeah. So kind of like I would say like a Pavlov's dog type thing. Yeah. You know? But it was what it was. And we'll see what happens now. All right. That is it for Extreme Rules. All right. We talked about earlier, we thought it was kind of dull, but now we've got to give our official stuff on this. So thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where are we standing?
You know, it wasn't a bad show. It was just really dull. I'm going to give it thumbs in the middle. But, you know, no match was bad. You know, I wasn't huge on Oscar Carmella. There was some entertainment there. That might have been a bad match, in my opinion, but not terrible. And you know, there wasn't anything bad, but there wasn't anything great. AJ Rusev was very good, but I wouldn't call it great. You know, the last 5 or 6 minutes of Roman Lashley was great, but the first half wasn't good. You know, the main event was good, but disappointing. And I'm just, you know, thumbs in the middle. I think is where I'm going to go. Thumbs in the middle.
I'm going to go thumbs down. Like I said, I had good expectations, and it just didn't go all the way like I was hoping for. So, especially for the main event. And again, it was just dull, and for an extreme rule fair review, it was really kind of boring.
You know? Right.
And it was just odd because, you know, you're supposed to be doing this, you know, this early start time and all this other junk, and they ended 20 minutes early, which I'm not going to complain about, that's for sure. But it was odd that they ended 20 minutes early when you had 12 matches, but the show went 3 hours and 40 minutes, so that's still a long time. But yeah, it's just odd that they ended 20 minutes early. Yeah. That's something that they don't do, and they've been going past 11 lately. So different deal there. All right. That's it for the show. We'll be back in 5 weeks for SummerSlam. God knows what we'll see there. It's going to be a spectacle, no matter what. So, real quick before I get off here, Devin, since we did our last show, you and Dylan have a podcast up, your brother, on the Place to Be Nation Network. Talking WWE, so talk about that real quick.
Yeah, we did a podcast on the first half of WWE from January 1st to June 30th. Roughly, what happened during those months, and talked a little bit about what we think might happen in the second half of the year, and the big subjects of what occurred and what might occur and whatnot. We talked a little bit about the in-ring and the storylines and the booking and whatnot. So definitely check that out, and that is on Place to Be Nation.
Yes, so everybody check that out on placetobenation.com. All right, that's it for us. So thank you, Devin. As always, this is Kristen. So long from the Peach State of Georgia.